known mainly as the ISIS, or ISIL in the Western world, was founded by Abu Mus'ab al-Zarqawi and became known internationally in 2014 after driving Iraqi security forces out of key cities in lightning attacks followed by its capture of the strategic city of Mosul. For several years, the group carried out the most brutal attacks against civilians and government forces in both Iraq and Syria. Just to name a few, the Sinjar massacre, during which thousands of Yazidis were butchered, and the killing of more than 2,000 cadets and personnel at a military academy in Iraq's Tikrit. They also inflicted irreparable damage on Iraq's vital infrastructure. The savagery against the civilian populations was beginning to raise concerns in the international community about the situation in the two Arab countries. Several regional nations, including Iran, were already viewing Daesh as a national security threat. That prompted Iranian authorities to move to assign top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, to take on a military advisory role to help those countries eradicate the terror group. With the liberation of Abu Kamal, a Syrian city close to the border with Iraq that was the last stronghold held by Daesh terrorists, and the bringing down of the flag of the terrorist group and the raising of the flag of Syria, General Soleimani announced the termination of the rule of Daesh. In a letter sent to Iran's leader in November 2017, the commander outlined who had been behind the creation of the terror group.
All these crimes have been designed and implemented by U.S. leaders and organizations according to the acknowledgement of the highest-ranking U.S. official who is currently president of the United States. Moreover, this scheme is still being modified and implemented by current American leaders.
The Iranian commander also hailed Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Sistani for mobilizing all facilities to fight the scourge and praised resistance forces in Iraq and Syria for their role in defeating the terrorist group.
Certainly, the resistance of the Iraqi and Syrian governments and the perseverance of the armies and youth of these two countries, especially the highly popular mobilization forces and other Muslim youth from other countries with the prominent presence of Hezbollah led by its great leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, played an important role in overturning this dangerous event.
General Soleimani also acknowledged Iran's role in bringing the life of Daesh to an end.
Definitely the valuable role of the nation and the governments of the Islamic Republic of Iran, the respected president in particular, the parliament, the defense ministry, as well as police, military and security organizations of our country in supporting the above mentioned states and nations is admirable.
General Soleimani, along with commander of the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Units, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was assassinated in a U.S. drone strike in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad, in January 2020 as part of a plot to remove a force against a group created by the U.S. and its allies to pursue their political goals in West Asia.
Hamas movement held a press conference during which all Palestinian factions condemned Britain Home Secretary Priti Patel's announcement that she's seeking to declare Palestinian group Hamas a terrorist organization. Palestinian factions say this move targets the Palestinian resistance and comes to the benefit of Israeli occupation at the expense of Palestinian rights.
All Palestinian factions here today condemn this decision and we consider it another aggression added to the history against Palestine. This is a violation against international law that gives Palestinians the right to defend themselves. Considering Hamas as a terrorist organization is a violation of our people's right of expression and freedom. We call on the British Parliament to refuse this decision.
The ban, which must be approved by Parliament, would make it illegal in Britain to be a member of Hamas or to express support for the group or facing up to 14 years in prison. The UK government argued that it was not possible to distinguish between Hamas's politica and military wings, calling Hamas fundamentally anti-Semitic.
We really condemn this British move that targets all Palestinians and shows the British support for the Israeli entity against Palestinians. The UK has first given Israel the green light to go ahead with its crimes by the Balfour Declaration that we are still now paying its price. Instead of redeeming this declaration and standing by the Palestinians, the UK UK gives the green light to demolish the Palestinian resistance.
Hamas, a Palestinian resistance group that fights against Israeli atrocities, has ruled the Gaza Strip since 2007. Hamas expressed the British government's decision as shocking and accused the UK of continuing with its aggression against Palestinian people.
Palestinian factions here have expressed anger at the British government's decision to ban Hamas's activities in the country. They regard the move as a blatant support for Israel at the expense of Palestinian rights. They say the resistance front has the right to defend Palestinians with all means. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
A new Min Press News study based on Department of Defense documents can reveal that U.S. weapons manufacturers have sold well in excess of $28.3 billion worth of arms to Saudi Arabia since the Yemen war began, including 20 separate deals inked during Biden's presidency. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Alan McLeod, journalist. This article is published under the heading, Despite Pledge, Biden Leaves Tap Open, Approving Billions in Arms Deals to Saudi Arabia. Stay tuned for the second part of this article, please. The biggest profiteer from Yemen's destruction has been aviation giant Boeing, which brought in $13.9 billion in sales over the period. Next comes Lockheed Martin, which has signed 62 separate contracts with the kingdom since March 2015, worth in excess of $7.4 billion. Third on the list is missile expert Raytheon, which has cashed in on the violence to the tune of $3.3 billion. Boeing's spot on the top of the pile comes in large part thanks to a massive $9.8 billion contract signed last year to maintain and modernize Saudi Arabia's fleet of 269 McDonnell Douglas F-15 Eagle fighter jets, including changing out hardware components, updating software, and improving weapon systems. 2020 was a great year for the company as it also secured a $1.97 billion fee to provide 650 SLAMER cruise missiles to the Saudi government. Lockheed Martin has scored big with the Saudi Navy, making billions of dollars, including a nearly $2 billion contract to build four warships. In addition, it secured enormous sales of Patriot missiles and laser and infrared technology. Black Hawk helicopters made by its subsidiary, Sikorsky, treated by the DoD as a separate entity, were also in high demand. Meanwhile, many of Raytheon's largest deals include air-to-ground missiles, guided bombs, and widespread logistical planning and technical support. The top 10 war profiteers supplying the Saudis with arms are as follows: the Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Sikorsky, PKL Services, S&K Aerospace, DynCorp International, AITC5 Domains, JVL3 Communications Corp, and Kratos Technology and Training Solutions. Reading the approved sales, what becomes clear is the depth of U.S. involvement in virtually every aspect of the Saudi military. Of course, there are direct arms shipments, but there are also contracts for helmets and a wide range of equipment, intelligence services, maintenance arrangements, and even for English lessons for Saudi pilots to help them better use their aircraft features. While the offensive is widely known as the Saudi-led attack on Yemen, in reality, U.S. U.S. made aircraft armed with American missiles and bullets, maintained by American crews and flown by pilots trained by American operatives, hit targets selected by U.S. intelligence. All of this is done under political and diplomatic protection by Washington, which blocks attempts by regional organizations to mitigate the destruction and shield Saudi Arabia from international consequences. This, in other words, is an American attack on Yemen. It is inconceivable that the Saudi-led coalition could be carrying out its attacks without the support of these companies. Kirsten Bays of the Campaign Against Arms Trade, CAAT, told Mint Press via email. Western-made weapons have been central to a bombardment that has destroyed schools, hospitals, homes, and created the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. It is long past time for arms shipments to the Saudi-led coalition to be brought to an end, it added. In total, 86 U.S. companies have profited from sales to Saudi Arabia since its intervention in Yemen, including household names like General Electric, Booz Allen Hamilton, and Honeywell. The full list is also available in the accompanying spreadsheet. The value of the contracts is relatively straightforward. Counting the dead is not. One recent estimate, however, put the cumulative death toll from the conflict at over 560,000. If that is the case, American companies have made about $50,000 in sales per death. The Saudis have deliberately targeted Yemen infrastructure, including hospitals, farms, and sewage plants. Oxfam calculated that attacks on health and water facilities have taken place on average every 10 days since the conflict began. It is beyond doubt that American arms are in part of the blame for the carnage. In the first 2 years of fighting alone, pieces of Raytheon weapons were found at 12 different sites where civilians had been targeted. Meanwhile, fragments of Boeing Joint Direct Attack munition bombs were identified in the wreckage of a marketplace that had been targeted, killing 107 civilians, including 25 children. Not to be left out, 500-pound MK-82 bombs built and supplied by Lockheed Martin were used in an infamous 2018 attack on a school bus, killing 40 children, and a 2016 strike on a funeral hall that left 240 dead. The company's unexploded cluster munitions also littered the country, likely causing casualties for years or decades to come. The United States is the only major Western nation not to have signed the 2008 convention banning the production and use of cluster bombs. For almost 7 years, Saudi forces have maintained a naval and aerial blockade of Yemen, cutting it off from the outside world. The closure of Sana'a Airport has been devastating for Yemen, driving up the prices of life-saving medicines and humanitarian aid, and preventing mercy flights for tens of thousands of critically ill Yemenis who need emergency treatment abroad, Atayeb told Mint Press. Weapons manufacturers are well aware that their profits live and die on the decisions made by legislators. Lockheed Martin's latest annual report makes that explicit. In a section entitled Other Risks to Our Operations, the Bethesda, Maryland-based outfit noted, international sales also may be adversely affected by actions taken by the U.S. government in the exercise of foreign policy. Congressional oversight for financing of particular programs, including the prevention or imposition of conditions upon the sale and delivery of our products, the imposition of sanctions, or congressional action to block sales of our products. For example, they state the U.S. government has imposed certain sanctions on some entities and persons as described in the risk factor below and could act in the future to prevent or restrict sales to other customers, including the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Unsurprisingly, then, the military-industrial complex has lobbied the government hard to continue supporting the violence. Ronald L. Perillux, Jr., an executive with Lockheed Martin, denounced the wave false hostile media reports about Saudi atrocities, described human rights laws as a significant irritant, and argued that the best thing to do is help the Saudis finish the job in Yemen by providing them with the benefit of our experiences, the training of their forces, and probably replenishment of their forces. His counterpart at Boeing, retired Air Force Lieutenant General Jeffrey Kohler, agreed, arguing that weapons transfers were actually a force for stability. When you sell somebody a big platform like an F-15, you build a 30-plus-year relationship with that Air Force, he said. If the public had their way, U.S. involvement would cease. A 2018 poll found that 82% of respondents wanted Congress to act to halt or decrease arms shipments to Saudi Arabia. American law already bans the sale of weapons to human rights-abusing countries, but this legislation is constantly ignored. Conservative estimates suggest Washington is supplying military aid to almost three-quarters of the world's dictatorships. According to data from the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, around three-quarters of all the Saudi military purchases come from American companies. Much of the rest comes from Great Britain. Riyadh's top 10 suppliers since 2015 are as follows, with percentage of total sales in parentheses. United States about 74%, United Kingdom 12%, France 4%, Canada 2%, Spain 2%, Germany 1%, Italy 1%, Switzerland 1%, and Turkey 1%. The British figure is dominated by BAE Systems, which has closed deals worth over $24 billion with Saudi Arabia since it began bombing Yemen, documents obtained by CAAT show. CAAT's base told me press, BAE Systems UK-made Typhoon and Tornado aircraft have been central to Saudi Arabia's devastating attacks on Yemen. BAE Systems also has 6,300 employees in Saudi Arabia supporting the Saudi Air Force as part of the British-Saudi Defense Cooperation Program, and we know it sends weekly shipments by air to Saudi armed forces from its own private airport. Thus, while a figure between $28.3 billion and $63.1 billion is already monstrous, it tells only part of the story. The likes of Boeing, Raytheon, and Lockheed Martin were already supplying the Saudi government with weapons long before the conflict began. Boeing since 1945, Lockheed Martin since 1965, and Raytheon since 1966. American arms companies continue to supply other members of the Saudi-led coalition with similar arms. That number will continue to rise as deals negotiated with the Trump administration come to fruition. Therefore, the true extent to which the military-industrial complex is profiting off some of the most extreme suffering in the world is still not completely clear. All that is known is that the Saudis pay in petrodollars and the Yemenis pay in blood.
Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa, via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Thousands of Yemenis have taken to the streets in major cities across the country on Monday to denounce the U.S. complicity in the protracted Saudi war on the Arab country. The biggest rally was held in the northwestern city of Sada, where thousands carrying Yemeni flags and chanting anti-American and anti-Saudi slogans poured into the streets. The protesters say Washington is behind the military and economic war on the nation and is prolonging the war and siege of Yemen. Mohammed Ali al-Houthi, a senior member of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, says the United States spearheads the devastating Saudi-led military aggression and brutal siege against his country, stating that Washington is complicit in the crimes that the Riyadh regime is committing against the Yemeni nation. He said the U.S. has been killing Yemeni people and destroying vital infrastructure for the past 7 years, stressing that the Riyadh regime and its regional allies would not have been able to do anything without Washington's support.
So in the last days, only Saudi Arabia carried out in one day 65 attacks on different civilian targets in Yemen. This is how we see the Americans' complicity, because they do nothing to stop the Saudi war. On the contrary, they encourage this war to continue.
The organizers of the protest said in a statement that Washington was misleading the world about its stance toward Yemen. The statement said the administration of President Joe Biden continues to provide Riyadh and its regional allies with military and political support, enabling them to press ahead with their onslaught and commit crimes against the people of Yemen.
This war has to end. And to underscore our commitment, we are ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales.
The U.S. president made the pledge back in February this year. He touted the move as part of efforts to restore an emphasis on human rights. Biden, however, said Washington will continue to support and help Riyadh. The peace activists who hailed his announcement are now dismayed at his administration for going back on the promise. Back in September, September, the U.S. State Department approved its first major arms sale to the kingdom under President Biden, with the sale of 280 air-to-air missiles valued at up to $650 million. A State Department spokesperson defended the sale as, quote, fully consistent with the administration's pledge to lead with diplomacy to end the conflict in Yemen.
We see that there is no will to end this war on Yemen. Moreover, we see also the Americans are not asking the Saudis to lift the siege on the Yemeni harbor and the Yemeni airport in Sana'a. Therefore, they are the direct contributor of the siege imposed on the population of Yemen.
President Biden has broken another promise about defending humanitarian rights, an issue he's taken much of his presidency on. Back in February, a declassified U.S. intelligence report concluded that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman authorized a team of Saudi security and intelligence officials to kill dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi. But Biden later decided not to punish bin Salman, saying it would be diplomatically unprecedented for the United States. The U.S. takes in stride the violations perpetrated by its allies while accusing countries it deemed its adversaries of the same charges. Wouldn't that embolden those officials to commit even worse crimes, knowing that they can get away with murder in the most literal sense?
Genoa U.S. Indian Industrial School, a government-run boarding school for Native Americans located on the edge of town in Genoa, Nebraska. Decades after its closure in 1934, researchers have unearthed the bleak history of this institution. They confirmed that over 100 Native American children died at this school, using newspaper archives and school newsletters to identify them, because official records were destroyed when the school closed. Search for the graves of children is in progress at the site of the Genoa school. Researchers said the true death toll is probably much higher. The passing of the Civilization Fund Act in 1819 by the U.S. Congress authorized the government to establish residential boarding schools and relocate Native American children by force. It's estimated that hundreds of thousands of children were sent to boarding schools operated by the government or churches across the U.S. However, some never returned home. Students were victims of harsh punishments and hard labor, and many of them died of diseases. One descendant claimed his great-grandmother was blinded while a student at Genoa, probably by having lye soap rubbed into her eyes as punishment. While they were removed from their families and homeland, children were prohibited from speaking tribal languages in a bid to subdue or eliminate the Native American culture. The narrative has an uncanny resemblance to Canada's residential school system. In the 19th century, Canada also established mandatory boarding schools for Indigenous children. 150,000 Native or First Nations children were forcibly removed from their families and sent to residential schools. Schools were rife with physical abuse, rape, malnutrition, and other atrocities against children. This year, remains of 215 First Nation children were discovered at the site of a former residential school near the town of Kamloops in British Columbia. Some of the children were as young as 3 years old. A 2015 investigation into Canada's residential school network concluded the Canadian government and churches have pursued a policy of cultural genocide against the country's rightful owners through the 20th century.
And just imagine somebody coming to your home and taking your children from you when they're 5 years old, 4 years old, and taking them away, and away from your influence, away from your understanding, away from your culture. That's what happens.
One of the tactics used by the U.S. federal government to destroy the culture, religion, and way of life of Native Americans was the establishment of boarding schools. The discovery in Genoa School is only a tiny part settlers inflicted on Native Americans. Back in the late 1700s, American colonies declared their independence from the rule of Britain. That became the foundation stone of the modern United States, a colonial state which expanded from a group of British colonies on the Atlantic coast of North America by displacing and killing millions of Native Americans. When Christopher Columbus reached the Americas in 1492, 10 million indigenous people lived in what is now the United States. By 1900, there were less than 300,000. Another atrocity against Native people in America is the implementation of the Indian Removal Act. In 1830, the U.S. federal government endowed itself with the right to take Native-held land east of Mississippi and forcibly relocate Native people from their homes in Georgia, Alabama, North Carolina, Florida, and Tennessee to Indian territory in what is now Oklahoma. In a mass atrocity remembered as the Trail of Tears, tens of thousands of Native Americans died or were killed after fleeing their homes in terror.
The immigrants never had any land when they got here. And whatever they got, the land they stole.
Native Americans were expelled from the lands they had lived in for generations. They were victims of wars, mass killings, and discriminations while the U.S. government destroyed their cultural traditions. Even today, discrimination and oppression against minorities exists in the U.S., as racial discrimination is systematic in American society. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas is now designated as a terrorist organization by Britain following the Friday announcement of UK Home Secretary Priti Patel. The move brings Britain in line with the United States, which designated Hamas a terrorist group in 1995, and the European Union. UK Home Secretary Priti Patel justified the decision by arguing that it was not possible to distinguish Hamas's political and military wings. She claimed that Hamas has a significant terrorist capability and access to extensive and sophisticated weaponry. This is while the group uses its weapons to defend the Gaza Strip against Israeli aggression. Patel also highlighted the importance of a ban to protect the Jewish community. The British official, however, did not make any reference to Israel's deadly attacks against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. The British Parliament will vote on the proposals next week. If Patel's bid succeeds, showing support for Hamas in Britain could be punished with up to 14 years in prison. Israel applauded the news, with its foreign minister, Yair Lapid, saying the move was a result of joint efforts between the British and Israeli regimes.
And, of course, it was all in cahoots with Washington as well, apparently. The British Home Secretary, Priti Patel, who announced this decision, made the announcement in Washington, not even in London. So you can see the Israelis, the British, and the Americans were all involved in this.
The London's decision adds the political wing of Hamas to an existing ban on the movement's military wing, Al-Qassam Brigades. This move has drawn widespread condemnation. The Palestinian Authority says the UK took the measures at Israel's request, adding that it's an unjustified aggression against the Palestinians and will hamper reconstruction efforts in the besieged Gaza Strip. Iran has also denounced the British measures. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian said the Palestinians' rights cannot be trampled on by distorting facts. Hamas has slammed the UK's move as a crime against the Palestinian people.
The British Home Office's decision to consider Hamas a terrorist organization is a crime against our Palestinian people and all their history of a struggle, as well as a condemnation of the legitimate struggles of all free peoples against colonialism. This decision, if implemented, is considered a great political, moral, and legal sin committed by Britain, in addition to its first crime of establishing the Zionist entity and making the Balfour Declaration.
Hamas's spokesman said Britain's move encourages the Israeli Israeli regime to continue its atrocities against Palestinians. The Balfour Declaration was a public statement issued by the British government in 1917 during the First World War, which laid the foundations for the entity of Israel. The declaration is seen as a catalyst for the 1948 Nakba, where more than 750,000 Palestinians were expelled from their homes. The Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Expatriates condemned the ban on Hamas, describing the move as an unjustified attack on Palestinians who have been subjected to the most heinous forms of occupation and historical injustice as a result of the Balfour Declaration. Following the blacklisting of Hamas, the resistance movement reacted, saying in a statement that, instead of apologizing and correcting its historical sin against the Palestinian people, Britain supports the aggressors at the expense of the victims. It also added, resisting occupation by all available means, including armed resistance, is a right guaranteed by international law to people under occupation. Hamas also urged its supporters to condemn the UK's move, as it described Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands, forcible displacement of Palestinians, the demolition of their homes, and the siege of more than 2 million people in the Gaza Strip as terrorism.
Well, implicitly, I guess it's saying okay to Israeli crimes, but no different from they've been saying okay to Israeli crimes since 1917. So in that sense, it's nothing new.
Based in Gaza, Hamas is a resistance group against Israel's occupation of the Palestinian territories. Hamas and Israel clashed most recently in a deadly asymmetrical war in May, during which the Israeli regime killed at least 260 Palestinians, including 66 children, through its continuous bombardment of the Gaza Strip for 11 consecutive days.
Of living in the UK surged in October to a 10-year high, with the figure now more than double the target set by the Bank of England. The UK's Consumer Prices Index rose by 4.2% in the 12 months of October, up from 3.1% in September. Driven by a dramatic jump in household gas and electricity prices, the figure was higher than forecast by economists.
Now, there's a lot of different factors. The big one, of course, is the incompetence of Boris Johnson's government, which cut Britain off from its major sources of trade and raw materials, has made everything much more expensive. He's managed to introduce, they've reintroduced customs charges, they've reintroduced processing charges that didn't exist in a free market, so of course prices go up.
With the annual inflation rate more than double the 2% target set by the government for the Bank of England, the increase will put pressure on the bank to raise interest rates from as early as next month amid growing concern over the cost of living. Rising consumer prices have ramped up the cost of living, especially when wages have failed to keep pace. The Bank of England expects inflation to rise further to around 5% in the spring of 2022, before falling back towards its 2% target by late 2023.
Now, there are two aspects of all of this. Inflation is a question of the value of the currency. When the currency is devalued, you get inflation. But rising prices are a separate issue. Not all prices are rising. On the contrary, property and some things are going down.
As the impact of higher oil and gas prices fades and demand for goods moderates, household energy bills were the biggest driver of inflation after Ofgem, the energy regulator, lifted the price cap on domestic gas and electricity last month. It meant that gas bills rose by 28.1% in the year to October, while electricity climbed by 18.8%.
Most working people in the Western world have been on certainly in the Anglo-speaking world, have been on a petrol pay freeze since Ronald Reagan in 1975 in real terms. Their wages have been held down, while productivity and profits and the share that the bankers take has rocketed upwards.
Demand for oil and gas is pushing up energy prices world. This means higher bills for householders and for businesses, many of whom will pass on some or all of the extra energy costs to their customers. UK authorities in October lifted the so-called energy price cap, which limits standard variable tariffs charged by domestic energy providers.
The effect is catastrophic. In Britain, the energy prices shot up, and the government's response was to cut back on the welfare spending, to cut back on the money that unemployed and ill people got. So they've deliberately targeted poorer people.
UK and European gas prices have hit one-month highs as concerns over winter energy supplies rise. Delays to the Nord Stream 2 pipeline from Russia have stoked fears of a winter natural gas shortage in Europe. Germany has suspended its approval process for the controversial Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline, which would double its reliance on Russian gas following growing geopolitical pressure to scrap the project. The suspension of the Nord Stream certification is a setback to Gazprom's plans to extend Russian gas dominance via a new pipeline across the Baltic Sea. Europe faces a looming winter gas crisis, which has fueled fears of a widespread industrial slowdown due to factory shutdowns and potential power outages. It is also expected to drive a cost of living crisis for homes and small businesses. Gas prices have reached record highs in recent months, ignited by the global surge in demand after the COVID-19 economic slowdown last year, and fueled by Russia's reluctance to export extra supplies to Europe to help meet demand, despite rocketing market prices.
Sometimes fetch attractive sums of money, but this one has gone far beyond, as it's a really rare handwriting belonging to a world-famous scientist. This manuscript was sold for a whopping $13 million at an auction at Christie's in Paris, but would you still be surprised if we told you that it belongs to no one but the great physicist of our time, Albert Einstein? Einstein did not have a habit of wraps, and this is one of only two manuscripts that have survived. Einstein wrote the 54-page document in the early 1900s in Zurich, Switzerland, and his colleague Michel Besseau has preserved it since then. The document contains Einstein's preparatory work for his signature achievement, Theory of General Relativity. Einstein's letters have set records twice before, but for much lower prices. November is the best time of the year to see polar bears moving around Canadian shores. During this month, the carnivores gather in large numbers and wait for the waters to freeze before they begin their seal hunt. These bears are playing and wrestling in the Canadian city of Churchill, top the polar bear capital of the world. The area is located within a natural habitat of a large population of polar bears. Sometimes the city's residents even share their streets with these animals. Currently, there are nearly 25,000 polar bears in the world, and Canada is home to more than 17,000 of them. However, wildlife organizations say these animals are facing the threat of extinction by the end of the century due to global warming. In a war ravaged city, androids serve clients in a restaurant in Mosul, an Iraqi city that still bears the scars of the years-long presence of terrorist groups. This fully digital eatery offers a futuristic experience to its customers. From interactive tables to glowing constellations, everything seems like a journey into the future. But the robot waiters are the stars of the show, and the major reason the restaurant attracts a large number of visitors every night.
The idea started during the COVID lockdown. As you know, people spent most of their time on social media during that period, since commuting was not allowed. So we tried to look at different ideas from around the world, and thank God we were able to execute this idea and complete this project.
The owner of the eatery says he has imported the robots, but other technologies used there are the work of a group of young engineers from the University of Mosul. The venue has already become very popular, and many visitors call it their favorite place in the city. Qatar displays a dazzling drone show as it unveils the countdown clock for the 2022 FIFA World Cup in Doha. The clock, in the shape of an hourglass, is located at Doha's iconic Cornish fishing spot. The distinctive design enables the structure to be seen from any angle and stand out from the spectacular city skyline behind it. The event reveals to fans worldwide that just 1 year to go to the big kickoff, famous athletes including David Beckham and Samuel Eto'o were in attendance at the ceremony. They may not realize it, but they are extremely lucky. Two pandas have been adopted by superstars. Chinese Olympic champion Zhang Jiechi and Paris Saint-Germain footballer Kylian Mbappe have become godparents to a pair of panda cubs. The athletes have both expressed satisfaction with their new role, with Mbappe calling his godparenthood a big moment. The cute cubs are only 3 months old and can barely stand on their own feet. They are called Yuan Dudu and Huan Lili. Space lovers have been treated to an epic lunar eclipse that dazzled the night skies of the northern hemisphere. The event is also known as the Blood Moon because of the red haze seen around the moon during the eclipse. The 3.5-hour phenomenon gave stargazers the chance to witness the longest partial eclipse in 580 years. Although NASA calls this celestial event a partial eclipse, around 97% of the moon was cast into a red hue by the Earth's shadow. A total eclipse could also be seen in Russia's far eastern regions. The next longest partial eclipse will take place in around 648 years.
An 11-month-old baby has become an internet sensation after a video of her snowboarding went viral in China. Wang Yuji is a daredevil infant snowboarder whose adorable face sticks out underneath all the protective snow and sports gear. Her parents decided to learn skiing during the winter, but they also wanted to include their baby on the fun of snow sports. While snowboarding might be a bit too early for a toddler who can barely stand or walk, Yuji was not scared at all and even enjoyed it. China, which is hosting the Winter Olympics in a couple of months, is encouraging citizens to try ice and snow sports.
Every year, the roads across this tiny island in northwestern Australia turn scarlet just as millions of crabs leave their homes in the depths of the forest and start marching together all the way to the ocean where they can mate and spawn. The spectacular group voyage on Christmas Island happens after the first rainfall in October or November. And in order to give these red creatures the leeway, locals close off multiple roads across the island. They've even built a special bridge for the crabs so that they can cross the road unharmed. The mesmerizing migration is now a tourist attraction, drawing nature lovers from around the globe.
Paleontologists in Brazil have discovered remains that could belong to a species of dinosaur
as yet unknown. The fossils were found at a site in northeastern Brazil. A team of scientists is trying to put together the bones and complete the huge dinosaur's skeleton. They think it lived during the Cretaceous period, which began around 145 million years ago and ended with extinction of all dinosaurs roughly 66 million years ago.
A new study shows that moderate consumption of tea and coffee may be better for your health than previously thought. The study conducted by a Chinese medical university says tea and coffee can help keep stroke and dementia at bay. And if you're wondering what is meant by moderate consumption, it's defined as something between 2 and 5 cups of tea and coffee, either alone or combined in one day. The study followed more than 360,000 people aged 50 to 74 for over a decade. Some scientists have praised the study as robust. Others, however, say the participants were all selected from the UK Biobank, which means they're healthier than the general population.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Pomegranate has a special place in Iranian culture. There is a trace of the fruit everywhere from poetry to cooking. Iranians even hold a pomegranate festival in the fall. This year, the event is held in one of the main parks in the capital, Tehran. The festival features different varieties of pomegranates that are grown across Iran. The visitors can also find pomegranate products, including juices, concentrates, and dressings. The event includes cultural parades, music concerts, and traditional live performances. Iranians say they always welcome the pomegranate season, as it's one of the old symbols in the country's literature. Christmas season always brings happiness and joy to people around the world. Many Parisians these days are taking a respite from their daily routines and hitting famous departmental stores now light up with present boxes. Cheerful families could be spotted at Christmas-decorated galleries, Lafayette, and Printemps department stores. Automated figures and colorful window displays are the center of attractions for them and their children. It's a season when people buy Christmas gifts for their loved ones, and stores make big profits this time around. Many Parisians say they want to take advantage of this period, as the government is debating whether or not to impose a COVID-related lockdown. In Venezuela, a large number of musicians are striving for one common goal, and that's setting the Guinness record as the world's largest orchestra. Over 12,000 musicians, mostly children and adolescents, have played together to make that happen. Of violins, violas, and double basses playing in unison at this setting in Caracas. The musicians are all connected to the country's network of youth orchestras. For them to set a record, over 8,000 instruments had to play at the same time during a 5-minute period of a classical piece. Right now, a Russian orchestra that played the country's national anthem is holding the record. Once done, the crowd of musicians erupted in cheers, lifting their instruments and waving Venezuelan flags. Guinness will announce its decision in the next 10 days. tourists and residents in Los Angeles have been mesmerized by a dazzling new event the U.S. city is hosting, with holiday-themed and full of colorful lights. Visitors can enjoy a mile-long walkway covered on all sides with brightly lit installations. Artists from around the world have taken part in the exhibition. The centerpiece display is a cathedral tunnel lit with thousands of bulbs. Another amazing attraction is the orbs, lit up with thousands of torches. The event has been a huge hit with the LA public.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice.
And it gets to be out in the open, and it's like the perfect night to do it, so it's great.
It's definitely the best. Like, we had to do, like, in a car to go see lights, and then we got to, like, now, like, go around and actually walk and get to see everything up close, which is super nice.
Yeah.
Definitely after the, what, year and a half that we've had.
Yeah.
So.
And it's really nice to see everything up close, because it's like, you see in a photo, but then it's more real and real, so.
Yeah.
The event opened to the public on the 12th of November and will run for 5 nights. Preparations for the event, however, started a month ago. The organizers say millions of bulbs and 17 miles of cables are used for the 18 art installations.
A gray and gloomy look to a cheery and colorful appearance. That's the story of how a neighborhood in Peru's capital, Lima, is being transformed to become a tourist attraction. A group of artists in Lima are bringing color and joy to this hilly neighborhood by painting the walls of houses, creating an optical illusion of a giant mural. The project is visible from different spots across the city. The designers are hoping what they did can improve the lives of residents in a neighborhood that was considered to be unsafe before.
What we're doing here is communal work with all the neighbors, and we are doing it because it's important to change the environment through the use of colors. This hill was considered an unsafe and dangerous area of the city, so we decided to change that social stigma through art, which for me as a muralist is the best tool to achieve it.
The project was started 5 months ago, and workers are now putting the final touches to their work of art. The mural covers over 300,000 square meters. It's the largest in South America.
The birth of a baby sloth at an uncharacteristically hasty speed has surprised London zookeepers. A tiny two-toed sloth named Terry was born to a mother, Marilyn, at the weekend. The zookeepers say there was no sign at all that Marilyn was going into labor when they checked her in the morning. However, less than an hour, they spotted something like a tiny arm tucked into her tummy. Marilyn had quietly delivered the baby with no fuss at all while her keepers were chopping up sweet potatoes for her breakfast. The mother and baby are said to be doing well, but the zookeepers still don't know the